From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armenia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk words we like to debate. Who's right? Who's wrong? Sometimes we both are right and wrong. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas. And joining me as they do each week, language experts and New York Times bestselling authors, Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Well, hello, Kathy Petras at your home in Armenia. Ross, hello, you are there at your home in Toronto. As far as I know, neither of those things is debatable. You are there, and I am talking to you. However, today we will be talking about things that are debatable and probably cause people a lot of frustration because they're debatable.
And Fletcher, I do have to say, I think your segue was debatably good.
I appreciate you at least, you know, throwing me a little bit.
Was that a segue?
Yeah, it was more
that
the intro,
too is
right?
debatable. Yeah. That was an intro.
Oh, and before I forget to mention it, keep sending in your pet peeves. We've been having a lot of fun reading those and talking about some of them on air. We've been doing a few here and there, but we're planning to have a big, huge pet peeve extravaganza. Pet peeve palooza. I can't remember what you called it, Kathy. A big pet peeve episode with a whole bunch of them. And so that'll be a lot of fun for us, and we hope for you. So keep sending those in to us. Our email addresses are at the end of this episode. And you can also, of course, send us your voice through a voice memo. Okay, now, debatables. Let's do it.
Okay, a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about, let's say, a long-lived pronunciation or a long-lived pronunciation.
Yes, we were.
And Kathy, Fletcher corrected you. What did you? You said long-lived.
Short-lived.
Is that correct?
Short-lived, but yeah.
It was short-lived.
Oh, short-lived. Okay, but you said lived, and Fletcher said lived, or vice versa?
No, you're right.
Okay.
I said short-lived, and I still do.
Okay, so we're going to go into this discussion of what, let's call it, what Fletcher brilliantly introduced as debatables in language. Is it long-lived? You say long-lived. I say long-lived. You say potato. I say potato. So let's go.
What about you?
Sorry. That's actually a pet peeve. No one says a boot like that. Whatever. I should put that in my pet peeve thing. Anyway, go on.
Okay, so what do you say? Do you say short-lived or short-lived?
Kev, this has bothered me ever since we discussed this. I don't know. I keep, you know, I'm sitting there. I woke up at 3 last night and I was thinking, is it long? Do I say long-lived or long-lived? I don't know. I think I say long-lived. I think.
What about short? Do you say short-lived?
Yeah, right.
Well, I'm going for long, so. Short-lived, short-lived. I think, oddly enough, Fletcher, this is even more horrible to confess. I think I would say that's a short-lived. Yeah, I would say short-lived and long-lived, which is really horrible, but I would.
I appreciate that. I can get on board with that.
Actually, Ross, I agree with you. Long-lived sounds better than long-lived, but short-lived, now they all sound bad.
Of course.
I know.
I do say short-lived, but I am conscious of it every single time I do it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's a really good way to live your life.
I think, Fletcher, you shouldn't worry at all about it, particularly because I've mangled both words. Therefore, if I do it, it's okay. But no, I think the interesting thing is, and we've talked about this at length, language really changes all the time. The issue here is the long live does not come from the verb. It comes from the noun, life.
Right.
So therefore, we should be a long I. However, and I mean, I'm going to throw in a little bit of Old English here. Life in Old English was spelled L-I-F. And it was pronounced, this is before, we have to talk about this one day. Kath and I keep avoiding it. But there was something called the Great Vowel Change in English around the 1400s or so. And long vowels changed pronunciation. Life in Old English would have been pronounced leaf.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And then if you're adding an ED ending, that has its own syllable.
And the F would have changed to a V because it's between two vowels. Would be
right.
Long-lived, which is really. So what is like long-lived or long-lived? Long-lived sounds like different from both. So not a big worry for me.
Yeah, as far as I know, they're both acceptable now. I mean, they have to be because I would guess a much higher percentage of people say short-lived than say short-lived.
Although technically, I mean, if you're going to be historical, you are correct and I am wrong.
Right.
If you're going to be like modern, which I am a modern kind of woman, I would argue that because you're seeing it L-I-V-E, you do think live as opposed to live.
Yes.
Because it's not life anymore.
Right. And then the American Heritage Dictionary, a number of years ago at this point, it was interesting. They had 43%, they had a panel, a usage panel. Is this good? Is this right? Is this wrong? 43% liked the short I sound. 39% preferred the long. And 18% found, and I'm in the 18%, and Kathy, I think Fletcher, we all are, found both pronunciations equally acceptable.
I do, but I prefer short. I prefer lived.
But I'm not going to have a fit about either way.
Yeah, no. It, you know, it's one of those things where I'm being a little snotty about it, and everybody else says it a different way, and that's totally fine.
Mm-hmm.
Next, momentarily.
Okay.
What does that mean to you, Fletcher?
Momentarily, in a short period of time. I will do that momentarily. I will do that in just a little bit of time, sometime. Not a concrete amount of time. And probably I have something else to do first. Really, that's all. That's what it means.
I might never get around to it, but I'm trying to make you feel better, right?
So now, Fletcher, you're in England.
Uh-huh.
And someone says momentarily. Do you know that it actually probably means something different in British English?
No, I don't.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a Brit said, actually, we found this online, a UK person said, whenever I hear, you can hear this and then you can tell us what momentarily means in British English. Whenever I fly with an American airline and hear the pilot say, we will take off momentarily, I'm tempted to say out loud, I hope not.
Really?
Yes.
Mm. Oh gosh, I have no idea.
In British English, momentarily is for a minute. For a moment, for a short time. The lightning flashed momentarily, then the sky was dark again.
Oh. Well, if I read that sentence that you just said, Kathy, it would make perfect sense to me. I would absolutely understand
right.
that. But if someone said they were going to do something momentarily, I would definitely think it meant in a moment. Not for,
that's what
not
I.
For
I mean, I, that's what I always hear. Yeah, you're on hold. The customer service rep will be with you momentarily. Yeah.
Instead of going hi bye like that, which is what a Brit would hear.
I mean, basically, it's just a word with two different meanings, and we just need context to understand what it means.
Actually, though, momentarily used to have four meanings.
Oh God,
it used to be instantly, from moment to moment, briefly and very soon. And here's one that we found on from Oxford English Dictionary, the OED. Robert Southey, you know, the Scot. I am interrupted momentarily by visitors like fleas infesting a newcomer. It's a little bit of a misanthrope there, but...
Wasn't he the poet laureate?
Yes, but kind of misanthropic too. But whatever, he probably wanted to focus on poetry. But anyway, in that case, momentarily meant from moment to moment, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, if I read that now, I would think that it meant they interrupted me briefly.
Yeah, I would too.
So it used to mean instantly and in a moment?
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, that's hard.
Yeah.
Ew.
But fortunately, that's going away. So.
Yeah, that's
but
gone,
But the
yeah.
interesting thing is that the fourth meaning that Ross said, the very soon, like, you know, we were talking about how we do it in a short time, was pretty rare. And it was the 1900s that caught on in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Because it sort of melded with the second meaning from moment to moment. And now you've got the last two meanings, the briefly and the very soon, both coexist. It's just that you don't have the last one as often in current British.
And we don't really have that British one. It's virtually nowhere in current American, I would say.
For a short time?
Yeah.
Oh, I think, like I said, I think if I came across that reading something written by an American, I wouldn't think any, I mean, I would absolutely understand it. I mean, assuming the context was there.
Oh, I agree. I think you'd understand it, particularly with the lightning flashed momentarily. You see the past tense, and the past tense gives you an idea that it's not, you know, going to happen in a moment.
Yeah.
But I'm just thinking how I would use it. I would use momentarily almost exclusively in a minute. Okay,
in conversation, yes. I might even write momentarily, meaning for a brief moment. I glanced at her momentarily.
I'm sorry, I want to interrupt. I'm looking right now. I just plugged momentarily into Google News.
Right.
And the headlines are not Ticketmaster data obtained from Snowflake hack momentarily leaked. That's not just... No, they're using it the original way. Large home momentarily threatened.
That's true. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah, multiple mergers may manifest momentarily.
No, multiple mergers will be in very soon.
Yeah, that's very
soon.
Yeah,
finally a break in the rain momentarily.
Yeah, for a minute.
For a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Famous actor discusses being resuscitated after momentarily dying.
Yeah.
This is interesting because, like, I mean, this is sort of the problem with analyzing a language that you speak in a way. Because I'm serious, because we instinctively use it, because you're doing it that way. Kathy just read them and I immediately understood them.
Of course.
Without any, you know, like, oh, that's the second usage of momentarily. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is really sort of cool.
And I couldn't even come up with that definition of it earlier when you asked me.
Yeah, I know.
And it's the first one listed in all the major dictionaries.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
I'm looking.
Maybe we should all take English courses so we can better understand
vocab.
We're going to have a vocabulary test, Fletcher, in an hour, and then we'll see. But anyway, momentarily, we're going to do the next word, cliche as an adjective.
Oh, that is cliche?
Yes.
Oof.
That's so cliche.
I'm not okay with that. I'm sorry. I'm just not okay with that.
I'm not either. I hate it.
So cliche, of course, should be a noun. Like, it is a cliche. And something is cliched, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. As the adjective. So people are using the noun word as the adjective that is cliche.
However, this makes me wince because I hate it. This is one of those ones that if I don't correct it out loud, I correct it in my head when I see someone saying, oh gosh, that's so that's cliche, or it was cliche to do that. It's considered absolutely acceptable now.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I mean, I know it's very, very common. I didn't realize it was considered acceptable now.
I don't like it. I really don't. That one bothers me.
Yeah.
I'm not going to attack you if you say it, but I'm not, you know, but I don't like it. Do you know what it comes from? It's interesting. I didn't know this at all. Did you realize it comes from a French word, cliché, the noun with ER, to click? And it was a stereotype printing. It was a printer's block, and it would make a click sound as you put the mold onto the metal. And that became... came into meaning what we know because it was like you can reprint thousands of the same thing. So it becomes sort of trite. Everyone does it. It's all over the place. That was a really interesting etymology, I thought.
So we could say, like, that's clicky.
Yeah.
I like clicky.
I like clicky. That's good.
Okay. I've got a question for the two of you. How old do you think cliche is an adjective? Like, these ideas are cliche.
Oh.
Not even the clichéest of reporters. The cliche question we ask. Okay. How far back do you think it goes?
Well, if it's actually acceptable now, it probably goes a lot further back than I realize. I mean, I would have assumed it was relatively recent.
I'm seeing it when it's an adjective. It's 1922, the clichéest of reporters. Then it's ideas, old-fashioned and cliche as they are. Instead of buying a Moreau lithograph, go to Soho or another cliche print. The cliche question. I see it really starting in the 20s, the use of cliche as a adjective.
Huh.
But I too, Fletcher, I thought this was really recent. I thought I attributed this to, like, online social media, sort of Valley Girl-y stuff. I really did.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah, I did. I would have thought of it as very recent. I would have thought, not super recent, but 80s on,
I would have said 80s or 90s, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's interesting. I would have put it much earlier.
Really?
I don't know why I would have. I think maybe because of the French aspect of it. I just would have thought that it would have, like, entered the language in, like, you know, F. Scott Fitzgerald or something like that, I would have thought.
As an adjective, though. I'm not talking about it as a noun. I'm talking about
as an adjective. As an adjective.
Yeah.
That's what I meant. I would have just, I mean, you know, it's like, there's no scientific reason why I would have thought so. I just thought so.
Yeah, no, I thought it was definitely a modern thing. I thought 20th century thing.
Late 20th.
Well, 1920s.
Later 20th century.
Yeah.
I don't like it, though. I'm still going to dislike it when I see it. People saying that's so cliche.
Yeah, for sure.
I like it so cliche.
I don't like it. I don't like that at all. Fletcher, this is another one. I was surprised this was a fairly common mistake, and we were too. Basically, we're going to say people are unfazed by it. Now, when we say unfazed, this is a spelling question. Is it unphased or unfazed?
Yeah, the latter.
You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you say you were surprised that people get that wrong?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not surprised at all.
Okay.
No. Well, like, I mean, phase, P-H-A-S-E, is a much more common word, I think, than phase, F-A-Z-E. Mm-hmm. So it's not surprising to me at all that people would just assume that it was the phase, P-H-A-S-E, like, without thinking about what that might mean.
Just automatically
yeah.
do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. We found one on NPR, actually, an interview with a book,
oh,
Brett
wow.
Anthony Johnston's novel, Remembering Like This. And it wasn't the author who did it. The transcriber had the thing and they wrote phased, P-H-A-S-E.
Oh, wow.
Apparently, we looked at it and it's in many, many places.
Mm-hmm.
And for both of us, we didn't really expect it.
It surprised me. I think, though, that the key is we had, wasn't it, Ross? We found, they have AI. There was an AI example. I know it's an LLM, but they call it AI here. And they said the difference, I love this, unfazed, F-A-Z-E-D, and unfazed, P-H-S-A-S-E-D, are often confused due to their similar sounds, but they have distinct meanings. And they have these examples, and it's the same thing. The unexpected news left her unfazed, P-H-A-S-E-D. Even when faced with criticism, she stayed unfazed. This is what they're using as examples, U-N-P-H-A-S-E-D.
Wow.
But then they have the team was unfazed by the tough competition, UNFAZED. She remained unfazed by the unexpected news, as opposed to he, UNFAZED.
Well, thank you, AI, for such a clear distinction between two usages.
Great.
And then they suggest we subscribe to their writing assistant tools. Want to add.
No, thank you.
No. It was interesting, though, because we didn't really know anything. You're right, though, with P-H-A-S-E is a far more common word. Phase, though, I didn't know was American, F-A-Z-E. And it probably is a variant of the Kentish dialect, which I like, fees, which is to frighten, alarm, and discomfort.
Hmm.
Which I think is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But it came into the States as F-A-S-E. But when you think about it, I'm going to throw one thing out. Phase, P-H-A-S-E, in like physics or something, refers to like, you know, a wave.
Yeah.
And so if you're out of phase, you have two like waves that are different, you know, frequencies. They're different. They're away, apart. They're not in sync. So in a way, unfazed kind of makes sense with P-H-A-S-E.
But the opposite way, right? But the opposite way. If you were unfazed, you would be out of phase.
No, it's the opposite. It's
cause
the opposite.
Some internal dissonance or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, they should be phased by it to make sense.
Yeah, phased would be good.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. So like, I was incredibly phased because things were going wrong. P-H-A.
Yeah.
But then I was also very unfazed. No.
It goes back to our non-plus, you know, problem. Remember that? He was non-plus by this. Yeah. You're right, Fletcher. That's a really good point.
Yeah.
But it's not necessary. F-A-Z-E is the way to go. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's not, there's not really... I don't think that's really debatable.
No.
The topic might be debatable, but I think that's just people getting it wrong, and that's pretty much it.
But we got curious, so we're curious if you're speaking about phasing, F-A-Z-I-N-G, or P-H-A-S-I-N-G, what about phasers?
Wait, what? One who phases someone else? Or,
no,
or the kind,
one
the
who
Star
has
Trek.
A phaser and shoots one in Star Trek.
As in the Star Trek phaser. Well, this was interesting because we found the first usage that we could think was back in the 40s, where it was actually, this was some electronics magazine said a variable length of coaxial lines folded back on itself. And then the first sci-fi thing was Robert Heinlein's Starman Jones.
Oh, I haven't read Starman Jones in years.
Me
too.
That book.
I love it. I own it still.
But in that case, the phaser was a synchronized field on the starship, which was not a gun.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very different. But then comes Star Trek, which made phasers famous.
And they got it from Photon Maser.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That was, so it was a portmanteau, actually.
Yeah.
Yes. What's a
before,
maser, though? I was
I don't
maser.
Know. Shouldn't it have been laser?
Let me just look it up. Masers are different than phasers.
Lasers?
Masers produce coherent electromagnetic waves.
Ah.
Well, thank you for that.
It doesn't mean a damn thing to me, but okay.
I know. But the other thing that sort of got me was that the phaser doesn't shoot. I always thought it did, like, they always have photon torpedoes. So I thought the phaser shot out light, but it doesn't. They made up a word, nadions or nadions, which are little particles, subatomic particles. And that's what a phaser shoots out, if you want to know this.
Wow.
Oh, gee, I didn't know that.
Kath, tell about your discovery of tractor beam. This fascinated
me. Since we were in a Star Trek mode, I was saying to Russ, I was always fascinated by the word tractor beam.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what they are, Fletcher? Do you remember those or not?
Yeah, like the tractor beam, like if you're flying around in your spaceship and the big ship sets its tractor beam on you, it'll grab you and pull you in.
Yeah.
So do you think it was invented by Star Trek? Or is it a real word?
I definitely don't know. The first time I remember a tractor beam is Star Wars, so I don't know about Star Trek earlier.
It was coined way back in 1931.
Wow.
By a guy, E.E. Smith. He initially called it an attractor beam. And then made it into the snappier tractor beam.
Oh, wow. That makes sense.
Yeah, because I thought it was like a tractor.
Right.
You know, somehow. Right. I don't know how or why, but I thought like a tractor beam.
Yeah.
And I always thought it was dumb because, like, why would you have a tractor pushing you away? Because there's no tractor pushing you.
Right.
That was so cool, I thought.
I never knew that. It always seemed a little weird to be a tractor. But I always assumed, you know, there was a reason. I just didn't realize. And I guess there is, but it's that it used to be a tractor.
Yeah, it never occurred to me either. I didn't think of it as a truncated word at all. No, it was tractor.
It is so weird. There was something I looked up because it just seems ridiculous that you could do this. But I looked up tractor beam the other day and there was some guy talking. And again, this is physics way beyond me. But they were saying they developed something, a little beam that can actually pull things in. So I thought, like, gravity? And it's something different. So I thought, wow, that's cool. But apparently it's, like, microscopic. Like, you can...
Yeah, I saw the same thing. It's a repulsor beam or a pressor beam.
And you can, like, pull, like, a tiny little bacteria, like, half an inch closer, which is not, you know...
But that's
big. Spaceship.
That's huge. That's important, Ross. This is
the
future.
Well, the little bacteria that might be.
Yeah, exactly. Imagine being the bacteria. That's a big deal.
This is one that Ross is not interested in this at all, and it's like one of my things. This isn't debatable. Have you ever heard of the dish? It's a toasted cheese dish, and it's called Welsh rarebit.
Oh, sure. Uh-huh.
Or is it Welsh rabbit?
Yeah, rabbit. Like, I always understood it was supposed to be rabbit, but it's spelled rarebit.
Mm-hmm.
You got that ruined everything.
Yeah,
I'm leaving.
My problem, my wife was like, she writes cookbooks and stuff, so I knew that all along too. That's why I was like, I'm fascinated by this.
Because I always thought that rabbit was like the silly way of saying it because it should be rarebit and people misunderstood it wrote it rabbit.
Rabbit.
Yeah.
What's funny is I see it written both ways now, too. I see it written as rabbit sometimes.
Which is how it should be.
Yeah, I've seen it too. A lot of like the, you know, professional chefs will say rabbit now.
Yeah.
No, but he's saying spelling. It should also be spelled as such.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
That's what I mean.
Why shouldn't it be spelled rarebit?
Because rarebit is the bastardization of rabbit.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Because people, it was initially, it was used in the 1700s, and it was a dish of toast and cheese. And it was perverted, as they say in the OED, by folk etymology as Welsh rarebit, which sounds nicer and righter, in quotes.
Because it's not actually
correct.
Because it's not actually rabbit?
No, yes, it's not. But it was really supposed to be like sort of a snide thing. Oh, the Welsh were so poor, they couldn't afford rabbit.
Right.
So they're just having cheese on their toast.
Right.
But they also have Scotch rabbit and English rabbit, too.
Mm-hmm.
So that sort of, that like actually makes the etymology a little bit more...
complicated.
Yeah. And then some people thought it might be ramekin, a similar dish.
I don't think so.
I don't know. I'm just saying that's what some people think too. The problem with the etymologies is they get really complicated. So
right.
We don't really know. I mean, we don't really know. But the other question I still have is, have either of you eaten Welsh rabbit?
Sadly, no. I picked up a cookbook from Emeril from the library, and he had what looked like a really good Welsh rabbit recipe, and I just didn't get around to making it before I had to take it back.
I've had it. I really like it.
It looked really good.
I like anything with cheese. If there's cheese involved.
I know. That's what I think, too. I've made my own little version of it, too. So.
Well, I also like the fact that they say that the Welsh was pejorative. And that might, Ross, explain the English rabbit and the Scotch rabbit. That it wasn't whale. It wasn't necessarily from Wales. The point was it was not rabbit. It was just cheese. So it's pejorative. Yes, yeah, Welsh rabbit.
Oh.
Like fake rabbit.
Right. So we have this dish with cheese and bread. And for some reason it's called rabbit. But, the Welsh are the poor ones. So we'll call it Welsh.
Yeah.
I don't know. That needs a lot of work, you know.
Because I did find that they said in among the English, Welsh was used, I quote this, disparagingly of inferior or substitute things.
Yeah.
Oh, I know that, but I'm saying the rabbit part is what got me. Like the fact that the English and Scots had rabbit.
That's what I'm saying. That was an extension of the Welsh rabbit.
Oh, so like Welsh rabbit would have come first, and then
the
English and Scotch rabbits came later.
After. Yeah,
so
that's what I'm saying.
I see what you're saying. So now we have to decide, like, which came first. I'm going to put this right in right now and see if we can find out. Which came first?
Which came first, the Welsh or the rabbit?
I have Welsh rabbit 1724, Scotch rabbit 1743, English rabbit 1747.
So basically the same period, though, really.
No, Welsh rabbit was first.
But 1725 versus 1740 doesn't seem like that big of a
difference. 20 long years, Ross.
You know, I think we should
happen.
I think we should end this debate and all three of us independently go and make ourselves a little toasty, cheesy dish.
That sounds so good.
It does sound good.
I was really, speaking of Welsh rabbits and such, when we were in Edinburgh, I wanted a Scotch egg so badly. We went to a pub. It was the worst Scotch egg in the world.
Oh, no.
I was so disappointed. I still haven't had an adequate Scotch egg.
Well, maybe you just don't like them.
I don't know. It's funny, Kathy, because there's an English pub here, a British English pub, and I've had the same thing. I asked for a good Scotch egg, and it was terrible. And I'm now beginning to wonder, like, is it they both were bad Scotch egg producers, or is it like Fletcher just said, we don't like it?
Should we just stick to the Welsh rabbits?
Yes, I think we should.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petras records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petras from his home in Toronto, Ontario, in Canada. Torrin Anderson composed our theme music, and our digital team is Beth Golay and Carly Cooper. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetras@gmail.com. You can also email us a voice memo of you asking it your question. You might get your voice heard on air. If you'd like to do the same thing by downloading the KMUW app, you can do that and just click the Talk to Us button. You can find all of Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you were going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.